Hello, so welcome to the first in a series of short recordings that I'm going to put up. I'm George Gilbert, I work at the University of Southampton, I'm a lecturer in modern Russian history, and I am recording a series of short talks for Outreach. They're connected by a wider theme, which is the Russian revolutions of 1917, and I do want to explore the course of that revolution itself, if only very briefly, in one of the latter talks. But before doing that, I want to think about some of the longer term antecedents that undergird some of those developments we see in 1917 itself, and also in the years immediately beforehand in the war period. So what I'm going to do is I am going to provide a series of small talks, kind of bite-sized chunks that are quite surface level, and I'm going to periodically refer to kind of new readings, new materials that you can maybe follow up if you're interested in exploring more. So I want to start then with a kind of a longer term trend in this series, social and economic change in Russia. That's what I want to talk about now. And I'm going to try to put together a little audio clip on, firstly, social and economic change, and then I'll do one on the rise of political radicalism, one on the 1905 revolution, one on World War One, and then finally one on 1917 itself. And what I'm trying to get you to think about is short-term and longer-term causes in why the Russian Revolution of 1917 happened. So what I want to do first then is to think about social and economic change. And as historians, we do like talking about longer-term and short-term causes. We also like thinking about changes as well as continuities. And of course, with the late Russian Empire, there's a lot of points you could make that are very, very important in terms of the institutionalization of the empire throughout the 19th century, especially into the early years of the 20th. The emergence of political unrest, which I'd like to deal with in a separate short discussion. And then you can also think, of course, about the rise of certain actors. You can also think about the role of the autocracy, the role of the Tsars themselves. Nicholas II, of course, who was the Tsar from 1894, crowned in Hodinkee Field in 1896, his coronation. So you can think kind of top down, like the great leaders, and also bottom up, people from below. What I'm going to think about now is kind of social and economic change. Now, as historians, of course, some of your exploration of the past can be about people, can be about individuals who are really significant, who kind of change history, like the makers and shakers of history, like. Very traditionally, this might have looked like a kind of a biography of great men, to slightly paraphrase Thomas Carlyle. More recently, there's been lots of good research on various minority interests. Gender history is, of course, enormous in virtually any field you can think of, and Russian history is no different. And then, of course, minority identities are incredibly important in so many fields. And that's true, of course, of the Russian Empire too. It was a very multi-denominational, multi-confessional, a very mixed empire in terms of its both national and also ethnic identification. Thinking about some of these changes, I do want to touch upon some of those identity issues because I think they are important when we think of social change. If you think of economic change, there's an awful lot we can say, especially in the last kind of several decades of the 19th century. An important figure here to realise, and this can make you think about the role of individuals in making history connected to longer term changes, is Sergei Vita, who was the Minister of Finance in the 1880s and 1890s, before he becomes Prime Minister around the time of the 1905 revolution. Now, Sergei Vita tried to make Russia undergo a crash course of economic development. Rapid industrialisation, a type of which we'd saw, of course, in Great Britain and then in Germany a few years earlier. He felt that Russia needed to go along this kind of industrial development course in order to catch up and overtake the West. You might have heard that elsewhere. But also to develop and consolidate changes in Russia. Urbanisation starts to become a real issue in Russia. It was a very rural country, and indeed throughout this entire period I'm talking about today, from the 1890s into 1917, that I'll look at in later little clips, it remains a very rural country. 80% plus of the population are peasants at every stage. the number of urban workers are going up, but it's going up very, very slowly. It's a country that is always, in this period, predominantly reliant on agricultural development. But urbanisation does start to become an important issue in the Russian Empire. You can see the development of major urban centres like St. Petersburg and Moscow, but also across the entire Russian Empire, and as we know, it's a vast landmass, down towards the south and the west, in regions we'd now recognise as Ukraine and surrounding Ukraine, you can see the rapid development of industrial centres. That's true also in the Caucasus regions to the south of the Russian Empire, towards Asia. You can see to the south of the empire, around countries like Georgia, Armenia and Azerbaijan, and especially thinking about particular urban centres like Baku, the development of existing urban areas into kind of quite large settlements based around particular infrastructures and particular industries. So Russian society is changing. There is rural urban change occurring in this area, but in comparative context it's quite slow compared to many other countries in Europe. There's also important processes occurring in terms of demographic change too. Under successive czars, Russia undergoes a variety of wars of conquest, and in the territory that's accumulated, large numbers of non-Russians fall under the jurisdiction of Russia's rulers. So those people are being governed by the auspices of the Russian Empire, despite perhaps not being Russian themselves. Therefore, an important issue, and one that many historians have looked at, is the role of national minority awareness and the implications that has for the development of national identity in Russia, and also the identity of the Russian state. There are many excellent monographs written on this, books related to the area. There's also many excellent articles too. Just to cite one of these people then, so Theodore Weeks has written some very, very good scholarly work on this, and he's certainly not alone. There are many good areas that have been assessed recently. So, for example, the presence of Jewish identity in the Russian Empire has long been an area of interest, and also the presence of large numbers of Muslims in various parts of the Russian Empire too has come under scholarly purview. Of course, with all of this change, there's also the question of conflict and management of the empire, both becoming extremely important. So urbanisation is of course very, very important. Resulting from that, you have the development of a distinct working class identity. So in addition to the long-standing land question in the Russian Empire, never really solved after the emancipation of the serfs in 1861, you have the development of the industrial working class and the workers' question in particular. And then, related to this, you've got, appearing in Russia for the first time towards the end of the 19th century, the strike movement, something that was quite well known about in Labour social democratic circles elsewhere in Europe, but it becomes part of the furniture of life in the Russian Empire too, towards the end of the 19th century. And of course, related to that, you've got the question that historians have looked at: do these strikes have primarily economic grievances, or are they largely political in how they operate? Something that's, I think, important to bear in mind, that relationship between economic and political tensions in the strike movement. On the one hand, of course, you might have strikes that are very definitely one or the other, but also, of course, on the other, you might have strikes that change. A strike that starts through economic rationales or economic motives might not end up like that. It might become one that becomes politicised. And one thing that historians have recovered very expertly in this period is that increasingly the period we're looking at is one that is shaped by all sorts of political processes and political ideologies. And of course Russia is no different in that respect to many other countries, but it is also worth thinking about the ways in which these political ideas have a particular valence in Russia, and that's something we want to look at in the next clip. It's worth just rounding off on this point of social and demographic change and these longer term structural processes, thinking about what national minority movements do. I mentioned them a few minutes ago. The 1897 imperial census was the first of its type in Russia. It's available for you to consult on the internet if you like, but we know from its findings that the Russian Empire contains very large numbers of non-Russian people, Ukrainians, Tatars, people from Central Asian regions, and also many Finnish people in the Grand Duchy of Finland, of course, Polish subjects of the empire, and of course, large numbers of Jewish people, the overwhelming majority of which live in the Pale of Settlement, an area created after the various partitions of Poland in the late 18th century, a process whereby, in the words of John Clyre, a very well-known historian of Russian Jewry, that the Russian rulers have, in his words, gathered their Jews in the late 18th and then into the 19th centuries. National minority awareness is an area that's been extensively researched in recent decades, and indeed it's something that's extremely important to think about when we think about the processes that are transforming the Russian Empire. Just to take one example of this, you might think of the disproportionate number of non-Russians who feature in revolutionary movements. Large numbers of Jews and also Poles and Finns do feature in revolutionary movements from the late 19th century into the early 20th. So we might think of, in addition to the grievances that many poor people might have in Russia, and of course class has been very important traditionally for explaining and understanding the Russian Empire, we might also think of the ways in which ethnic and national identities can intersect with some of those wider grievances. At this point then, I'm going to round off the first of these short clips. So that's a few thoughts on social and economic change, structured around kind of minority awareness, urbanisation, the development of the workers' question, the rural to urban change in the Russian Empire. And now I'm going to think about, for another short period of time, going to have a quick look at some of the political changes that are occurring in the longer term in the Russian Empire.